The church's music from the 20th century. The 17th century. The 11th century. The 8th century. The 4th century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
There's one reason that I'm standing up on this stage today. That's because of my Lord up above. I gotta say thanks to Jesus. You knew I was gonna do it, and I gotta do it.
Family Planning Services reduced cost. Contraception will reduce cost to the state and to the federal government.
So no apologies for that.
No apologies, no.
Mr. President, we need you to feed the good wolf within you. And I'm hungry like the wolf. To listen to the better angels of your nature and by your example, encourage us to do the same. Mr. President, tag. You're it.
Now, this is a tough one to deal with because in our society, as much as we talk about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, human life's value has, well, if it were a stock, it would have been downgraded. It might even be down in junk territory, human value. And we have a hard time in our pragmatic, independent, individualistic, pull yourself up by your own bootstraps and make your own way in the world society. We have a hard time distinguishing between human value and what a person is capable of doing. After all, everybody's got to pull their own weight. And if someone doesn't or can't, if they can't think, if they are not self-aware, if they are dependent on others, does their value go down? Many would, in a kind of typical American way, instinctively say, yes, in some way, they do. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc., live this Wednesday afternoon, the 28th of January. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We'll spend the first half hour talking to Scott Klusendorf about confusing human value with human function, part four of our five-part weekly series with him on bad ways to argue about abortion. And then we'll discuss Jesus' Sermon on the Mount as we continue our series on biblical examples of preaching with Dr. Carl Fikancher. That's the show. Our call-in numbers, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. And our in-studio email address, we'll take questions and comments right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org. Scott Klusendorf is founder of Life Training Institute. Scott, welcome back.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Someone might say, why is it even necessary to distinguish human value from human capacity or human function?
Well, I think we have to address this issue because the fundamental issue we're fighting about as a nation right now is this question: do all human beings have an equal right to life? If they do, then we're left with a very simple scientific question. When does science say that each of us begins? You answer that question with the scientific data, and the answer is clear. We each began at the very beginning once the conception process was complete. That ought to settle the debate. But unfortunately, as you pointed out in your introduction, not all Americans believe that all humans have an equal right to life. And those who deny the premise that each American has an equal right to life says that we only have it because of some functional ability we have that we possess in greater degrees than other human beings. And therefore, our right to life depends on how well we measure up to whatever subjective standard has been issued as the defining point for human value.
Is this the first time that I speak here as in the American context? This is the first time that we have struggled as a nation with a question like this. It sounds to me reminiscent of debates during the time of slavery there around the Civil War about whether or not black people were to be considered human in the same sense as landed white people.
Oh, we've been having this debate for over 250 years. This debate was going on when the Declaration of Independence was signed. It was going on during the Constitutional Conventions. And, of course, as you mentioned, during the Civil War era as well. We Americans have had a real rough ride defining who counts and who doesn't when it comes to human rights. And the basic confusion point in our government has been this. Do human beings have basic human rights, like the right to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, by nature, meaning they have them simply because they're human, or are those rights that government grants? If you go back, for example, to the debates that Lincoln had with Stephen Douglas, Stephen Douglas argued that the rights in the Declaration of Independence were simply the product of government granting the individual those specific rights. Lincoln argued to the contrary, that those rights are human in that we have them simply because of our nature as human beings. And he argued that the reason you couldn't treat a dog the same way you would, or the reason you couldn't treat a slave the same way that you would treat a dog, is that the dog by nature is radically different than the human being. The human being a special kind of thing, has rights that a dog will never have at the basic level. Of course, Douglas denied that, and we see that same denial taking place when you look at issues like embryonic stem cell research or abortion. You've got those who say all humans are equal by nature, and you have others who say, no, we're only equal if we perform certain functions at a certain level.
The term intrinsic is used often here, that human beings, whoever they are, and we need to get to that question, whoever they are, possess intrinsic value. Let's deal with the whole issue of, do human beings possess intrinsic value before we get to the question of who falls into the category of human beings?
Sure. Well, you can deny that they have intrinsic value, but if you take that road, you're going to then have to come up with some other thing that gives humans value and a right to life, or a right to not be treated unjustly, or any other basic right that is on the table. The intrinsic avenue works really well, because what that says is that each and every human being, simply by being human, in other words, simply in virtue of their humanity, because of the kind of thing they are, they have certain basic rights that apply to them that don't apply to other living things. That is the only way I know to account for human equality. Because, Todd, if you take the road that says we have rights because of some immediately exercisable capacity we have, let's say it's self-awareness, or the ability to live independent of another human being, or live independent of some other thing. If those things are what give us value, meaning we don't have value intrinsically, we only have it because we possess an immediate capacity for those other things, then human equality is out the window. Because of the listeners hearing us right now, we vary radically in our individual capacities. Some of us right now are not real self-aware. We've had a rough day. It's been a while since we had a Starbucks hit, and we're not real self-aware. Others of us have physical disabilities that make it very difficult for us to function physically at the level that others listening to us can right now. I was reminded of my own physical disabilities when I tried to play one-on-one with my 17-year-old son in basketball yesterday. I was reminded very quickly that what I am today is changing, it seems, moment by moment compared to the way he is excelling. By the way, I still managed to put in some good shots, but boy, it was a hard reminder. So if you make our equality based on these accidental properties that human beings gain and lose during the course of their lifetimes, you can take a document like the Declaration of Independence and throw it on the ash heap of history, because you can't argue that all men are created equal and at the same time say that what gives us value is not our common human nature, but something else that we gain through our functional abilities.
It seems as though a sliding scale would almost be a necessity if you're going to say, I mean, you're not simply going to be able to rule some people out of basic human value. You're going to have to have a sliding scale of human value where some are valued less than others and others are valued more than others. And some people reach the zenith of human value, but few. And many people may occupy the bottom of human value with lesser value. Is this an inevitable conclusion?
I don't see how you can avoid it. It follows that if our rights are based on some accidental or acquired property, like skin color in the time of Lincoln, or self-awareness, like people say now regarding embryos, then what follows is that since these acquired properties come in varying degrees, basic human rights come in varying degrees. And you have this sliding scale or bell curve where those with more of that property are more valuable and more of a subject of rights than those with less. I really don't see how you can avoid that. And this is where I think the Christian worldview really brings greater explanatory power to the question of human rights. Because the Christian worldview says that instead of our rights being based on those accidental things that come and go, our rights are based on our common human nature that we all possess equally. In other words, humans have value simply because they're human, not because of these acquired things that can come and go during the course of their lives.
Okay, when we come back from this break, we need to take up the next question. If, in fact, all human beings, all men are created equal, all human beings have intrinsic value, not a sliding scale of value, but the same value, the same necessity for protection, rights, however you want to put it, then the only other question we need to ask and answer is, when the Declaration of Independence opines all men are created equal, does it mean all or does it mean some? And into who falls into the category of all men, or who falls into the category of those who possess this intrinsic value? Scott Klusendorf is our guest, part four of a five-part weekly series with him on bad ways to argue about abortion today. The confusion of human value with human function or human capacity. Our call in number 1-877-623-6943 and our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org.
Did they tear it out with talons of steel and give you a shot so that you wouldn't feel, and washed it away as if it wasn't real?
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Thanks so much for sending your email. Now, I've produced Issues Etc. for more than 15 years, and I can tell you we've never received email response like this. But we simply can't reply to all of your email. So here's a way that I can almost guarantee a response to your question or comment. Call the Issues Etc. comment line 24/7, 618-223-8384, 618-223-8384. The Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
If you're a talk radio junkie like me, you might assume that the programming is free. Commercial advertisers pay for the production costs and staff salaries. Well, that's true for most talk radio shows, but not for Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is listener-supported. We rely on you to pay for the production, salaries, and airtime costs for this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, asking you to consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Remember, unlike other talk radio shows, Issues Etc. needs your financial support. We depend upon you for the continuation and expansion of Issues Etc. Thanks for your consideration. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking with Scott Klusendorf about the confusion of human value with human function. You'll find an article that our guest Scott Klusendorf has written on this subject under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. Before we move on to the question of who falls into the category of human being, you cite Hadley Arkus, a guest on this program, a great book he wrote some years back called Natural Rights and the Right to Choose, where he asks the simple question, if a woman has a right to abort, where did that right come from? Why is that a very important question here?
It's important, Todd, because people love to pluck rights out of thin air today. In our postmodern world, rights are just invented by my having a feeling or desire for something. And then we go to the public square and assert that we have a right to this, a right to an abortion, a right to gay marriage. But grounding those rights claims is another matter altogether. And so when people say to us, well, a woman has a right to an abortion, my first question, borrowing from Arkus, is where did that right come from? Now, this is a very difficult question for liberals to answer, because if the right to an abortion comes from the state, then the same state that grants that right can, of course, revoke it. And what can the liberal say in reply? If, however, the liberal responds that no, the right to an abortion is a natural right, meaning a right one has in virtue of her humanity, then the question becomes, when did that right come into being? And the obvious answer is the right came into being when the woman came into being, which puts liberals in the very unenviable position of arguing that although human fetuses do not have a right to life, they do have a right to an abortion, which is, of course, a very absurd conclusion. But I don't know how they can escape it, because if the right to an abortion is a natural right, then we had that right, or the woman had that right, from the moment she began to exist. When did she begin to exist? At the moment of conception. And that, of course, leads to the absurd conclusion I just mentioned a moment ago, that abortion rights advocates then are forced into arguing that unborn women do have a right to an abortion, but not a right to life.
Okay, let's ask and answer the more crucial question really here, and one that kind of, once it's answered, the first question kind of falls away in some ways. When they say all men are created equal, or when we say that all human beings have an intrinsic value, who fits in the category, all men, all human beings?
Well, it depends on who you're asking. I'll give you my answer. It would be anyone who's a member of the species Homo sapiens. That is who qualifies. Once you deny that and say that the only ones who qualify are those who perform or function at a certain level, then, of course, you can no longer argue for human equality. When people tell me, Todd, that something like self-awareness is what gives us value, my first question is, tell me why self-awareness is value-giving in the first place. In other words, it's not enough for them to simply argue or simply assert that self-awareness is what gives us value, and therefore, since the fetus doesn't have it, it doesn't count and can be killed. They need to tell me why self-awareness matters in the first place. For that matter, newborns are not self-aware. They don't have a sense of existing over time. They have no conscious desire to go on living. Does that mean we can kill them? Well, Peter Singer says we can. But the other problems that follow, which we've already touched on, is that you can't account for human equality if that's going to be your standard of who lives and who dies. You also can't really explain, and this I think is the key point I want to keep coming back to, you really can't explain why having the immediate capacity for self-awareness is what gives us our value in the first place. That needs to be argued for, and to this date, I've not heard anybody engage that question in a way that's persuasive to me.
When you say every member of the species Homo sapiens, that's a very scientific answer. That's rather cut and dried and rather objective. It really stands out in contrast to, well, only certain members of said species that possess certain qualities or capacities. That's very subjective.
It is subjective. And when you deal with a culture that throws out truth, whether it's biblical truth or let's say they're at least, or not even biblical truth, let's say they just throw out any idea that there can be objective, knowable truth that we can grasp. Once you do that, you're left with subjective preferences. And that is what we've seen, of course, happen in the realm of religion. Religious truth claims are no longer treated as items of legitimate knowledge. They're mere preferences. And now that has, of course, spilled over into ethics. Ethics is something we construct. It's something we do according to our own needs as a culture or as individuals. And, well, once you do that, you're in real hot water. And even the Supreme Court fell into this in the famous Casey decision in what's known as the mystery passage. The Supreme Court said that every person has the right to define for themselves the meaning of human life and human existence. Well, if that's true, why can't I just make up a particular human being to not have existence and not have meaning? They meant to apply that to the woman having an abortion, that she has a right to decide for herself whether the fetus she carries is an item of meaningful human existence. Well, if she's free to make the fetus up any way she wants, why can't I just make her up to be anything I want? And this subjective thing that has now taken over our definition of human value is eroding any logical reason whatsoever for supposing humans of any kind have value, let alone fetuses.
I don't want to sound alarmist, but it seems to me that the lethal logic of assigning people's value based upon certain capacities or abilities or other characteristics, functions, is really at the heart of what we see, say, in sub-Saharan Africa, genocide of one tribe against another, one religious group against another. It's not, they're just saying, look, they just do not deserve to live because of the following characteristic they possess.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And you were right earlier when you said, look, this debate we're having sounds very reminiscent of our history. We had it with slavery. We had it with the rights of women to vote, the rights of women not to be treated as property. And until we as Americans get it right, what it is that gives us value, we're in trouble. Look, in the past, we used to discriminate on the basis of skin color and gender. And now with elective abortion, we discriminate on the basis of size, level of development, location, and degree of dependency. We've simply swapped one form of bigotry for another.
Mary in Southern Illinois says this: who among us is capable of living independently in our modern society? Do we survive without farmers, without produce from other parts of the world, without the services provided by many other people? Your thoughts there with about a minute?
Well, we don't. You take an astronaut and take him outside his spacesuit, he's no longer viable. If you take a newborn and cut him off from any nourishment from his mother, he's no longer viable. These kinds of standards people impose subjectively run aground very quickly when they're examined in the light of reason, and yet our culture today continues to assert them as if they are somehow meaningful standards for determining who has value.
Legally, have we cut ourselves loose in American jurisprudence from the concept of natural rights, and are we just simply reaping the whirlwind of that particular apparently slight breeze?
Oh, there's no doubt we've cut ourselves loose. In fact, we've outright denounced it. There have been Supreme Court nominees who have been grilled by Democrats on the Senate committees for holding to theories of natural law and natural rights. We've all but taken the Declaration of Independence and thrown it on the ash heap. And liberalism today doesn't pretend to do this. It does it flat out in the open. And yet the outrage is simply not there. As long as big government gives us our handout, we seem to be happy.
Next time, it's disguising your true position by appealing to the hard cases. Give us a nutshell, about a 30-second preview of our next conversation, Scott.
Well, instead of defending the claim that a woman has an absolute right to abortion through all 9 months of pregnancy, liberals tend to disguise that view with an appeal to the hard cases. Well, what about the rape victim? The problem, Todd, as we'll talk about next week, their position is not that abortion should only be legal in cases of rape. Their position is that it should be legal for any reason, and that's what they need to defend, but they don't want to.
Scott Klusendorf is founder of Life Training Institute. We post a link to Life Training Institute at our website, issuesetc.org. You can find it by clicking on demand. Scott, thanks for being our guest.
Always good, Todd.